Welcome to the world of the strange, the mystical, and the unknown. Jerry Pippin's Parazone.
What if people could come out of one dimension to another? What if those entities coming out of one dimension to another were horrible? Demons of some sort. Or maybe angelic human beings. Hi, I'm Jerry Pippin. Welcome to the Parazone Hour, Tales of High Strangeness. Vera Yedoza is joining us from New Jersey. She's originally from Turkey and is our expert on the supernatural worldwide. And our guest from Springfield, Missouri is Tom Horn. Actually, he's outside Springfield, a little toward Branson. And he's written a book about Stargate. And in this book, he deals with portals. Portals where either interplanetary beings or perhaps interdimensional beings or beings from hell arrive. Welcome to the show, Vera. Vera Yedoza, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much.
Good. It's great to have you on the UFO Files again. And I know you've lined up Tom Horn for us, and tell us a little bit about that book.
Well, you know what? This is one of the most exciting books that I read recently, and Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012, and The Return of the Watchers by Thomas Horn. We had some emailing with Tom about the book, about Stargate, and this is one of the most exciting topics in UFO field.
Well, we have Tom Horn on the line. Farah is in New Jersey at her home studio. And Tom Horn, you've got a little ranch outside Springfield, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. In fact, I'm sitting here at my home studio right now, and right outside of this building, not too far from me, are a whole bunch of horses.
Well, that's pretty neat. You know, how far are you from Springfield? 30 minutes or so?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually, I'm not directly between Springfield and Branson, but I'm about 30 minutes from either one of those, kind of at an angle going towards the Oklahoma border.
Yeah, that's pretty country.
It's beautiful out here. We love it.
Farah, you want to start this interview with Tom? You and he have been talking quite a lot.
Yes, we have been talking about the Stargate. We have been talking about this interview, so it is time to start now. So, Tom, thank you very much for being with us tonight. So,
well, thank you for having me on your show, Jerry and Farah.
I have been reading your book again and again, taking notes, because each time that I'm reading, I find more interesting things, more historical things. But first of all, let's start with the title of the book, Stargate. What is a Stargate exactly?
Well, you know, a Stargate actually means different things to different people. And of course, given the fact that you've read my book, you know that I actually offer different descriptions in this book of what a Stargate is, and I kind of exchange similar terms to Stargates, portals, pathways. The idea to me being that whether we're talking about something that's an advanced science or whether we're talking about something that's metaphysical, it's the concept that there could be a pathway or a methodology by which another intelligence, something not human, would be able to move from its reality into our reality. So let me give you a couple of very quick illustrations about what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
There are
yes.
those who are among quantum physicists who see the possibility of stargates or wormholes as being advanced but natural science. And I tell people, you know, right away that I'm not a scientist, I'm a researcher, and so my ability to be able to dialogue about the possibility of things like quantum physics or even Einsteinian physics is very limited. But I do understand some basic things, or I should say I had to make myself study long enough that I understood some basic things, at least from the scientific side, about all of this, where, for instance, the ideal of wormholes. In the 1970s, you had a guy by the name of Alan Holt. He was the first guy that defined what was called the field reconnaissance space-time tunneling, or what today we more commonly refer to as wormholes or stargates. And this is a theory that hyperspace tunnels may actually connect either different remote regions of the universe or different dimensions and or different moments in time. And some people believe that UFOs, if you will, could hypothetically be traveling through these space-time tunnels from incredibly far distances to the Earth or from other parallel dimensions. And that in any case, they might be doing this in matters of seconds or maybe even at speeds greater than light. This was the, you know, this was the theory that was postulated by Alan Holt. It was picked up. A lot of people believe that it's fairly good science. And it's my understanding that recent improvements in our knowledge of general relativity has caused some people to believe that there could be such things as wormholes, and that the manipulators of wormholes or stargates, that is, some unknown advanced super intelligence from perhaps either a different dimension or from some faraway galaxy, that they could be appearing and disappearing through these traversable wormholes, and that because the science is so far above our knowledge, there's just no way for us to comprehend what's going on. We catch glimpses of these UFOs appearing and then disappearing and whatever. Now that's kind of the Farah, that's kind of the scientific way of kind of approaching what we think might be happening with the appearance and disappearance of the phenomenon that we refer to as UFOs. On the other hand, as you know from reading my book Nephilim Stargates, the year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers, I believe, like some of who I believe to be some of the best researchers in this field, and I'm talking about people like Dr. John Max, Dr. John Keel, Jacques Vallée, those are the secular researchers. There were also religious persons that have approached this study, like Dr. Ida E. Thomas. But the best of all of these have come to believe that, if not entirely, at least in part, part of the phenomenology that is occurring with UFO and even alien abduction phenomena and the rest of it, is spiritual or metaphysical.
Oh, yes. There is a scientific and there is a spiritual side of the UFO cases and alien abduction cases, close encounter cases, that's for sure.
Well, Tom, what do you think? Do you think it's a little of all of it, or is it completely
spiritual?
Well,
no, I believe that there certainly could be both. I mean, I'm a person who believes that we live in a magnificent reality. I mean, the cosmos, you know, like... billions and billions, you know, Sagan, and you know, planets and star systems, and I think it would be folly to think that there's no possibility. And even, and by the way, I don't see a contradiction here with religious faith. People who have faith, most of them now, you've noticed lately, the Catholic Church has very much warmed up to the idea of intelligence, not just the discovery of microorganisms on Mars or that kind of life, but advanced intelligent life. They've warmed up to that. The Muslims are open to that. Many of Earth's religions, including now many of the Christian community, believe that there is this possibility.
Yes, definitely in Islam there is the belief for the other dimensions, other beings living in other planets. It is in Quran. And also Sufism, the esoteric part of Islam, definitely accepts the existence of the beings from the other planets.
When we talk about all of this, Tom, and when you wrote this book, did you have a predetermined idea about stargates? I mean, you know, I think of when I think of stargates, I think of maybe some science fiction writer like Robert A. Heinlein many years ago writing about it, or perhaps more recently Star Trek. What was the hot button here that got you interested?
Well, you know, the irony behind all of this, Jerry, is that I was not a fiction writer. I wrote nonfiction. I was also a freelance writer, and I had gigs where I was doing writing for some of the largest newspapers in the United States. And I had no interest, by the way, at the time, in looking into this material, although I will admit, and Farrell would know this since he's read my book, that there was some experiences that were going on in my family as I was growing up.
Oh, yes.
That I couldn't comprehend. Later I went into seminary. I got a PhD, I actually earned an honorary doctorate also for my study in ancient biblical literature and Eastern literature. I have very good friends like Dr. Mike Heiser, who can actually interpret 7 extinct languages. But that was kind of the circle that, if you will, I hung out in. That's my background. But at the time, I was doing research. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I can't remember what I was doing research on. I was writing an article for one of the major U.S. newspapers. But I came across the term called transgenics. And at that time, Jerry and Farah, I had never heard this term.
Well, yeah, transgenic as in abductions or hybrids?
No. Transgenics as in a new emerging field of science.
Okay, I just want to make this clear for our listeners.
Yeah, and here's what struck me odd that year, and I'll make this fast because I want to get back on the subject. That year, according to this article that I had come across, fully one-fourth of all federal research grants in the United States was going toward funding transgenic research, and the military had a strong interest in this, and I looked up the term very quickly and found out that it had to do with the mixing of living species, the crossing over of species, blending one species with another. Now, today, we're doing this all over the world, at the embryonic level at least, and many people suspect much higher than that, perhaps in black budgets and in military laboratories, but at least at the embryonic level now, routinely, we are cross-blending humans with animals. And I, at the time that I came across this, I was astonished that as a taxpayer, fully one-fourth of whatever taxes I was paying that were going towards research were being given that year, and this was about 14 years ago maybe, towards transgenic research. So I wanted to do a lot of research into this and find out what it was we were paying for that we didn't even know what was going on. And to make this story quick, I did some research. I wrote a couple of editorials. One of them received fairly wide distribution. And out of the blue, I was contacted by Cal Thomas, the syndicated columnist for the L.A. Times.
Right, and where of him?
Yes, and he was blown away by the research that I had done. And I had thought, man, if Cal Thomas, who kind of lives in the news, isn't even familiar with what I'm talking about, and I wasn't familiar with it either, and I was a researcher, I had the suspicion that most people, and when I say most, I mean the vast quantity of people who were taxpayers, had no clue what we were funding. And so I just started doing a lot of research into it, but here's the crux. I wanted to know what these scientists had to say about, what might be the ethical questions about crossing the species barrier, what might be the philosophical questions, that side of it. But I also wanted to know if they had any concerns about throwing off the balance of nature. Because what we were talking about now, if you were a religious person, then this did not comply with, creation. Whoever your God is or whatever your belief system is, this was not something that the Creator had made. Well, also, if you had no religious faith, this was also not something that evolution had allowed for. And it's so that in either of these cases, I felt that we were talking about something now, like we've already seen, in genetically modified crops, that they could do things that we're not prepared for, because we know that genes, we study gene models based upon their natural host. But when I've had molecular biologists tell me that when you start transporting a gene from one host to a blended host or another host, it might behave in an entirely different way. So in other words...
you're talking about unintended consequences.
Unintended consequences, and I wanted to know what these scientists were saying, where we should be cautious. What would be the benefits of this? And I do think there are benefits to biotechnology. But what might also be some of the concerns? And here, let me get back on track. Here's what happened. Because we were kind of riding the bicycle while we build it, the science was so new and advancing so quickly that we really didn't have any field models that had been done to tell us, what we ought to be concerned about. And scientists were being very careful about what they might speculate about because they didn't want the public to, be alarmed about it. And so, I could not find any models in the scientific community about what might happen between the blending of humans and animals, but I kept coming across, and Vera, this of course will take us back to the book, I kept coming across this ancient story where it sounded to me like something like this had happened once before, where the gods had come down. And this was a story that was told literally in every society where they were advanced enough to be able to make records of their history. Whether they chiseled it in stone or wrote it on animal hides, there was this story where the gods came down, the super intelligences came down, and for some reason they wanted to blend, they wanted to mingle their species with the human race. They wanted to create for themselves a body into which they could extend themselves, and for some reason it seemed to require the need to blend different species. In order, you know, animals and humans and even plants, according to some records, in order to create something into which they could download themselves or upload themselves or whatever term you want to use. But I saw this as the first record of transgenic science. And it started sounding to me like what for many years I had only thought of as being mythology. You know, Zeus comes down, marries a human woman or blends with her, out of which Hercules, a mighty man of old, was born. But the story was being told over and over. I found ancient records like an apocryphal book called Jasher. And this is a very old book. It's actually referred to in Old Testament books of the Bible, like Joshua and 2 Samuel, though it's not part of the Bible. But this Jasher had recorded how that after these beings came down and used humans and animals for creating themselves a body, this is in the fourth chapter of the book of Jasher, if somebody wants to read this, that after that, men began teaching the blending of species of one kind of an animal with another kind of an animal, and that they were creating this exotic offspring, and that it actually had led to chaos. And so I started running into all these records, and I thought, you know, the thing that we have thought of for so long, that as being a record of mythology, maybe this was a record that was made to warn us that certain sciences might be catastrophic. Because you know how our records really only go back to about the Sumerian Empire. We don't know very much beyond the Sumerians. The Sumerians seem to appear almost overnight, just all at one time. They're there, and now we have history, and out of that comes Abraham and all these various religions. But we do have artifactual evidence all over the world that seems to attest that the Earth itself had highly intelligent civilizations that date back eons, who knows how far back, but that something catastrophic occurred. And this was that record, Jerry and Farrah, this was that record that just astonished me, that I seem to be finding where once before an intelligence had an interest in blending species.
We're talking with Tom Horn, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but you've got to take a commercial break, Tom. When we come back, I want to pick this up, and Farrah, I'm sure you have some questions about it. And
Yes, I have many questions, in fact.
And I want to get to some examples of this, Tom, and I think you're about ready to get there.
Sure.
We'll be right back. I'm Jerry Pippin, along with Farrah Yaduza. All of our shows on the Parazone Hour, Tales of High Strangeness, are available on demand 24/7 as a podcast or Windows download, and it's free. Just click on the Parazone button on the sidebar of our website, jerrypippin.com. I'm Jerry Pippin, Farrah Yaduza. Tom Horn's book again. Tom, the name of it for our listeners is?
Nephilim Stargates is the main title, the subtitle, The Year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers.
You know, Farrah, I've done a lot of shows about the Nephilim.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Over time. In the Mideastern legends and religions, anything like that happening there, too?
A lot. Tom was talking about Sumerian civilization, and a similar thing happened on Turkish territory, Turkish land. We have the Hittites civilization. Hittites were a very, very mysterious race as well. And we really don't know about their background. Where did they come from? We don't know. But historians and archaeologists believe that they came from the north. And they came to Turkish land. And they immediately changed everything on Turkey, in ancient Turkey. And Hittites became the first official government system, first official kingdom on Turkish land. Same. And they have so many gods who came from the sky and lots of contacts with the sky beings. It is the almost the same story.
Tommy, I know you've got a degree in divinity, right?
Yes.
But these things happened in other religions besides Christianity, as you alluded to earlier.
Yes, absolutely they did. In fact, what I found was that in every major civilization, so whether we're talking about the Sumerians, the Amorites, the Babylonians, the Greek Empire, the Egyptian Empire, you can actually find the record of what happened with these gods who came down, blended themselves with humanity, out of which this unusual offspring was born, that these things walked around on the earth, and in many cases, including in the Bible, not just the Bible, that they walked on the earth and they actually ruled kingdoms, and these beings were powerful. Some were giants, like you talked a minute ago, you mentioned the Nephilim, the giants who walked upon the earth. We've recovered either entire skeletons down through time or portions of skeletons to show us that some of these beings were somewhere around, you know, as high as 23 feet tall. Now,
really?
Yes. The Book of Enoch, according to the Book of Enoch, if we interpret the Book of Enoch correctly, some of these beings were as high as 200 feet tall. But we've never found anything to substantiate that. But we have found remains in various parts on the earth that seem to tell us that some of these things were extraordinarily large. How I went from, though, the study of all these different ancient mythologies, and you should understand too, Farah and Jerry, when I was, when I came out of seminary as a young seminary student, I of course had the answers to all mysteries on earth. But
where did you go to seminary?
Well, actually, I'm not going to say.
Okay.
I'm not going to say, and I also won't say what denomination I was part of for almost 30 years as an executive.
Well, a lot of my relatives are ministers.
So. Well, I'm not saying it. I'm not saying it because I'm ashamed. I don't want to be stereotyped, and I found, you know, often that people who...
Yeah, all I have to do is mention that some of my relatives are fundamentalist ministers, and they stereotype me that way.
So I learned a long time ago, just, you know, leave that side out of it, just keep it in research. But here's something that extraordinary that happened. My research into these stories, before I wrote the book, Nephilim Stargates, by the way, what had happened was I actually wrote a novel. My wife and I wrote a novel called The Ahriman Gate as a novel.
Oh, yes, yes.
There's actually a movie deal on this now. It's going to be made into a movie. It's going to be a pretty big movie. They have a $50 million budget.
That's big.
This is a done deal. I mean, money has already changed hands. We've already been paid. It's been worked through our attorneys. But when I was doing the research behind the book, The Ahriman Gate, there were parts of that that included trying to understand, you know, the legends behind the Nephilim, the possibility, you know, in part of the book talks about how there's a rogue presence of the government that has come across information on how to resurrect the ancient Nephilim, and so they're doing that. Well, I had to wrap my head around how all of this would happen. I had to understand biotechnology, cloning, transgenics, all that. So, you know, it took me a long time. Well, at the end of it, I wound up with probably 1,600 pages of research material, and so I decided to write the Nephilim Stargates as nonfiction. And Farah, you might get a kick out of this. I actually wrote that book in 90 days. In 3 months.
It's amazing.
It was the fastest thing I ever wrote. I do intend to go back and actually write an improved version that's going to be about 200 pages longer that has a bunch more information in it. But anyway, what happened, though, while I was doing this research, when I was a seminary student, I did did not believe that there was anything to this whole story about, you know, the Nephilim and the giants walking upon the earth, and I didn't believe that at all. And somebody told me one time, you know, that this story in Genesis 6 was a story about the Watchers, who Enoch had talked about, an extra-biblical book. Well, I should say at one time it was part of the Bible, but it was later expunged. But an apocryphal, a pseudepigrapha book, talking about these 200 very powerful angels that came down and blended humans and animals and made these bodies. Jude and Peter, by the way, in the New Testament, referred to them, those angels which get not their first estate. They wanted to leave their plane of existence, bottom line. They needed a portal. They needed a pathway. They needed a methodology by which they could leave their reality and come into our three-dimensional reality. I didn't believe any of that. And what happened was, as I was studying some 10 years ago to write this Ahriman Gate, the longer I studied, the more I came to believe that there really was something there. And I'll tell you how I became convinced. Because the story was so repetitive. It's like sitting in a court of law and hearing an attorney repeat eyewitness accounts. And they're repeating eyewitness accounts from people all over the world who are telling the same story. Now, each of them are telling it in their own way, and each of them are interpreting what it means in their own belief system. But the bottom line were, the facts on the ground were the same. And the fact that this was everywhere from China to, you know, to American Indians to the Middle Eastern, the fact that around the world this story had been told, literally it convinced me like an attorney would that you couldn't discount this many different eyewitnesses telling the same story that this event had actually occurred. And then one other thing that happened, and this was a surprise. I'm doing this research right into these humans and animal DNA harvesters, if you will, and it took a surprising twist when suddenly I started coming across a related phenomenon, something occurring in modern times called alien abduction. And I found that this need to blend humans and animals, or harvest DNA, if you will, from humans and animals, and sometimes even plant material being changed, like in these, what do they call them, crop circle areas. I started finding that there was something very similar in contemporary society, the removal of human and animal DNA in these UFO flap areas, what Jacques Vallée had called vital energy, matter associated with three-dimensional life forms, which he believed was being required as a kind of construct material for achieving incarnation by other dimensional beings. So I ran into this extraordinary thing that whether I was looking at ancient history, comparative religion, comparative mythology, alien abduction, there was this universal testimony from literally tens of thousands of people from the beginning of known time saying that some type of super intelligence had an interest in collecting and blending Earth species, not just humans but animals. You go to bed one night, you wake up the next day, and Skippy the horse is laying out in the middle of the field, and portions of its anatomy, its muscle mass, its blood have been removed with laser-like precision. And extraordinarily, you know, there's no blood laying around it. It doesn't seem to have put on any kind of a struggle, but there's no evidence of any chemicals that has been anesthetized. And it's laying in the field, and this material has been harvested. Most people don't realize, now I know that you do, Jerry, and Farrah, you do, but most people in the world don't realize that this has literally happened tens of thousands of times down through time, including thousands of times just in the modern era. And so far, all of the intelligence agencies in the world have not found or tracked down, you know, the international blood-sucking cult that's doing this around the world. It's a true phenomenon. It continues to occur. It's not just animals. Sometimes humans are found with pieces of their anatomy missing. Down through time, different names have been attributed to those who take DNA. Satan, the devil, Lucifer, Zeus, Hades, the Watchers. Enoch talks about the Watchers, but in the seventh chapter of the Book of Watchers, he talks about how they sinned against the animals in the same way they sinned against the most interesting discovery for me to start out studying modern biotechnology, especially things like transgenics, and then to find this story in ancient history, and then if you include ufology and alien abduction, perhaps nonstop down through history there is a record of these beings cross-blending species and animals, and at least in some records, for the purposes of creating a body into which they can extend themselves into our reality.
Tom Horn is our guest. Vera Yudosa is here, and she has several questions for Tom coming up after this message. Don't go away. Why visit the Grand Canyon in Arizona? Marv Mason knows why.
Mainly because the Grand Canyon is known as one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
No one gives a more personalized tour or knows more about the Grand Canyon than Marvelous Marv.
My main thing is education on the geology, because the Grand Canyon is a life record. It shows us where we were at one time on the planet with the continental drift and all the layers that were laid down by sediments, and then how the canyon was carved. And of course, the views, you know, a picture doesn't do it justice. But it's nice to have somebody there tell you about it that's lived there.
It's the best way to tour the Grand Canyon. Mar picks you up in a modern van at your hotel in the Grand Canyon area and takes you on a day-long tour. Contact Marvelous Mar Vacation Tours. Call and talk to him personally. 928-707-0291. Or visit his website. MarvelousMarv.com.
Website for MarvelousMarv.com. Real easy, real easy.
Banners on our website.